draft. Policy. Yep. We've still got in there, I made it, submitted a couple of times that in the middle of the page here, it's got IV in the red ink, where the general manager is required to undertake an initial assessment of a code of conduct complaint under section 28Y of the Local Government Act. I'm yet to be convinced that the general manager needs to access any closed audio for the undertaking of an assessment under section 28Y, which is to see if it complies with 28V, I think, from memory. To me, it does nothing to... I can't say that it does anything to... Having that in there does anything to help the general manager conduct an initial assessment. So I'm a bit unsure why that's still in there. But, and apart from that, I don't know why... I'm not averse to there being recording of audio workshops, but I'm not too sure what the exact purpose of it is in that instance, but that's my say, thanks.
Thank you. I'll give some high-level thoughts on the matter. I think that we live in changing times, and from a governance point of view, we are, as an entity, starting to balance out a number of different requirements. So it's not necessarily just the conduct of the councillors in this chamber, but it is also the impact that those councillors and their conduct have on the staff who are also in attendance in these chambers. So you have this nexus where, on one part, we're performing our governance, but on the other part, we also have a standard of behaviour and an audit trail that supports our undertakings to provide a safe workplace, as well as the occupational health and safety that is incumbent on us with our staff. So if you accept that little monologue, then the question is, what is an appropriate format, and where do we hold that that requirement? And I would argue that we hold that requirement in all of our undertakings. It's not just in council and in closed and open meetings, it is also in the workshops that we conduct. Having said that, of course, there's a trade-off, because on one level you want to make sure that there is an audit trail should there be any issues, claims made under that health and wellness and safety and workplace framework, but also that you have an appropriate record in those formal meetings so that you can prosecute any claims made against you. So I would say it's a bit tricky. I totally respect the mover's motion, and that there's a reluctance to record all of our undertakings, but I would say that you should give serious consideration as a body to our obligations to our staff. And if you don't record our workshops, I would say that we've probably only gone halfway. So I am not going to support this motion, only because I think as our first gambit we should try the highest level of compliance. If we find that that restricts the way that we conduct our business or the way that we get advice from our staff in workshops, then we can always take a step backwards. But I say we should start by recording all of our interactions where there are staff present with councillors. So I won't be supporting the motion. If you turn your microphone on, you may ask a question.
My question, Mr. Chairman, is if this motion does not get through and you tape workshop meetings, mm-hmm. will those taped audio meetings be available to each councillor like the public general meeting audios are?
through the chair to the general manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just navigating my way to the attachments to answer that, because the policy that's attached for consideration deals with access of information. So bear with me one moment, please, and I will refer to... So thank you for your patience, councillors, and I do note you've got your hand up there, Councillor Barwick. It took me some time, but I have landed on the section of the draft policy. It's section 8.4 in the policy itself on page 3 of the policy, or page 137 of your agenda, which extends into page 138 or page 4 of the policy itself. Which details access to be granted to a councillor, or application of access by a councillor to the general manager. It says access of recordings of a closed session of meetings is requested, may be granted by the general manager for following reasons. And then the next one talks about closed meetings. Talks about the general manager must maintain a register of requests.
It doesn't talk to workshop audio.
It only deals with the closed meeting, and it's for the purposes of a council to review a recording in which they were not present, and also to undertake their duties as a councillor. I think is a general capture there.
Does not mention.
So it does not. So you're right. So it does. So it does not deal with it.
Yeah.
So then, I can only say that in the absence of having that in the policy, that there's no avenue in here to provide councils with access to a recording of workshop.
Exactly, and that's why I've removed it from that policy, because mm-hmm. there is no access for us at all. And I'll wait till I sum up. I just want to ask that question.
Any other questions or speakers for or against? Then, not being any, I'll hand it back to our mover, Councillor Barwick. Take it away.
Thank you. As long as everyone's aware that access to the workshop, that's why I have removed it from the motion. To remove the audio of workshops so that we can take the others fine, have no hassle. So I'll leave it at that now, thanks.
Okay, Councillor Barwick has closed. So we are voting on Councillor Barwick's motion, which is to adopt the council meeting audio recording guidelines policy, excluding audio recording of workshops. All in favour of that, please raise your hand or say aye.
Aye.
Councillor Barwick, Councillor Mason. Councillor Lowe and Councillor Harris. All those against? Councillor, you're in favour? Councillor Keyser, Councillor Orr. So let me just make sure that I get my against. Keyser and Orr. And for, we have Councillor Barwick, Councillor Winston Mason, Councillor Heather Ashley, Councillor Winston Archer. You have you made a decision?
No, I'm against.
You're against? Against is Winston Archer. And Councillor Tim Harris and Councillor Simone Lowe. Motion is carried 5 to 3. So we will now commence recording our meetings and closed meetings, excluding workshops. That's the decision of council.
Good. So this is accurate voting, yeah.
Yep. 5 to 3, that is correct.
Yep. Thank you.
Archer and all. Correct. That is my notes as well.
Mr. Chairman, Archer. Just one more question, if I may, while you're on this subject. I know that our secretary has a standing order with some ratepayers of CDs that they book 12 months worth of CDs through her. Do they now have to fill out this application every time they want a CD? Or because I notice you've got that the Edwin wants a CD of the audio, they've got to fill out an application. They've got to drop it off, they've got to leave it, then they've got
to
come back.
We'll seek advice from our governance officer.
Sorry?
I will seek advice from our government. Assuming you're talking about Louise, governance officer.
Yeah.
Right? Let's not debate it. We'll seek advice and we'll...
No, I'm just asking the question.
We don't know. You're short. We prosecute our business, we've closed the motion, we'll provide feedback on the operations of that item. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, 8.6, our delegation register. So from time to time, we review our delegations register. There is an update in terms of the ALGAT template, which our team has given some thought to and has made minor administrative changes. Particularly, there are 4 tabled in the report. To update our register accordingly. Can I call for a mover to endorse the delegations register?
Could I please ask a question before you move it?
Yes.
Can you please explain to me section 40T? I mean, I've looked it up, but others may not have. Why are you virtually asking us to give you our delegated authority over to the GM under section 40T, because it's virtually saying that we have, it's number 3 on the delegation.
Yep.
It's virtually says that we have a conflict of interest, which really we don't. We are the caretaker of our land and our assets and that as councillors for the ratepayer.
So again, this is the ALGAT recommendations.
Yeah, I don't
spot,
care
but let me read it for the record.
You've
asked the questions.
But it's asking to go on to our delegation.
Yes, let me read it for the record. So section 3 says, the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act of 1993, section 40T, deals separately with applications for permits where the applicant also seeks the amendment of a local provision schedule, or the LPS. Section 40T3 also requires that an application for a permit in these circumstances be accompanied by a declaration that the applicant has notified the owner of the property and obtained their written consent. Consequently, there is no automatic function and power given to a council's general manager in relation to applications made pursuant to Section 40T. It is recommended that council consider delegating its functions and powers when it is the landowner. That approach provides consistency and results in a more efficient and appropriate approach where a council is the landowner. Such a delegation would present a clear separation to avoid any assertions that a council acting as landowner determining landowner consent is conflating its decision-making considerations with those of the planning authority determining whether to accede to a request or pursuing an amendment pursuant to Section 40T. It separates the two functions.
Yeah. No, it does to me. I would give me a
point. Are we debating here?
No, we really aren't.
Asking a question, not debating.
I think we're borderline.
Can you give me an example of conflicts to council laws? What is an example?
We'll through the chair to the general manager, and I take this one, and then I'm going to move it to vote to a calling for a mover.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think there is even through the whole local government reform process that we have been on a recent journey with, there has been a lot of commentary around the role of council as a planning authority and the conflict that it has, particularly with regard to representation of community versus an authority making decisions against the scheme. I believe that this is another step by LGAT, as advised by their lawyers, to help clear up that perception of potential conflict, particularly
correct.
When it's dealing with land owned and public interest.
Its own land, correct.
Council's own land. So I believe that's the intention of it. The General Manager often receives applications for consent on land for planning purposes and planning permits, and this affords the General Manager to utilise consent for someone to apply for authority to make an application on council land. It doesn't take the decision away from council. It's just simply to approve an application.
It gives you the authority, though. My question is to you: it gives you the authority. If you wanted to go and do something on Regent Square, you have that authority to do that. Or if you want to do something at the airport or at, I'm only thinking of land that we own, you see, that I mentioned these, then you have that delegate authority to go and do it, and then you come back and report to us 3 months after the event.
No,
that's not my understanding.
No, that's my not. It's specifically.
Sorry?
It's specifically for permit circumstances, nothing more, nothing less. But anyway, I think we are moving very close to debating this before we even have a motion on the book, so I'm going to correct that, and I'm going to call for a mover for the officer's recommendation, which is to endorse the delegation's register. Can I call for a mover, please? Councillor Harris is our mover. And seconded by Councillor Mason. Councillor Harris.
Thank you, Mayor. It's a whole lot of information that you have to decipher every year when the delegation register are updated, but it gives you a fair consumption of necessary information.
Thank you. Councillor Mace.
Councillor Harris said it all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any speakers for or against? Any questions? We'll move that to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand or say aye. We have Councillor Keyser, Councillor Mason, Councillor Ashley, Councillor Archer, Councillor Harris, Councillor Lowe, Councillor Orr, against?
No.
Councillor Bark. The motion is carried 7 to 1. Section 9, Infrastructure and Development, our much-loved East Beach viewing platform is in trouble. Page 62 is the recommendation, which is to fund remediation repairs to the existing viewing platform and then formally authorise the general manager to transfer the ownership to the owners of the land for their ongoing maintenance and custody. Can I call for a mover of this item? Councillor Mason is our mover. Seconded by Councillor Harris. Councillor Mason, take it away.
I'll move the officer's recommendation of 1 and 2.
Thank you.
Having lived in the area for over 50 odd years, and I've used that platform hundreds and hundreds of times, as well as many, many other residents and visitors and whatever. It's, I think, still needs to be there. So I think we should fund the repair so it's safe and appealing to the eye, and then transfer it to the land over under all of the rules and regulations that we discussed earlier about upkeep, and once he takes responsibility for it going forward.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Councillor Harris.
Yes, I've got a similar length of time as Councillor Mason in utilising the area. Maybe a little bit more, I'm not sure. I remember the days when the Surf Lifesaving Club used to be to the right of where that bearing platform is, a bit further down the dune. And that was in the early days of Mangareg and Flipper. And then it moved, well, we had a steel tower placed on the front of the beach, which was for keeping an eye out for swimmers and crabbers. Not that too many of us got into trouble, but the viewing platform, I think, is actually a good asset. And I'd like to actually see it done to the same standard as the recently refurbished East Beach area, with the same type of platform itself. Mind you, it might end up being three more dollars than what we actually anticipate, but you can't do half a job and give it over to somebody that you expect to maintain it. So, but I'm all for actually refurbishing it. This might mean a little bit more of an injection.
Thank you, Councillor Harris. And with that, I'll open the floor to speakers for, against, or questions. Councillor Orr.
So if we start doing work on the structure, will that then flag any upgrades that need to meet any accessibility for all? So wheelchair access and so on, if I start working on the structure?
Yep.
As Councillor Harris mentioned.
Through the chair to the Director of Infrastructure.
There wouldn't be a requirement to make it wheelchair accessible, but there are, once we do start doing works to it, some of the works that have been outlined are to bring it up to the current standard as to when we start doing works on it, but not all structure wouldn't have to have an accessibility ramp as such.
Thank you. Any other speakers, questions? Councillor Lowe.
Thank you. So I couldn't, I had a question, I couldn't remember the answer, so I've had a look up, but I still think it needs to just be mentioned on record that there is no ongoing guarantee that community members will be able to utilise the platform moving forward, even when it is repaired. I know that's the intention and it's been discussed, but at some time moving forward that could change. Yeah. Whilst I support that we've been lucky enough to have it in our community for so long and have had that access, and I think that doing the repairs on, even though it's private works, I still will be supporting it, but I just think that we do need to be mindful that moving forward we may not have that access. So I think it'd be just pertinent to comment on that. Thank you.
Duly noted and well pointed out. Thank you. Councillor Ashley.
It's very similar to my thoughts. I thought maybe when we put some sort of contract together that we said for X amount of years could it be used for a public viewing platform, just in that contract, just so that it ties it up for both council and for the landowner.
Again, note your thoughts. Thank you very much. Councillor Archer.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm a bit cautious of spending money on private, public money on private land and without security. However, I think on balance in this instance, given it's long, well established, appears the landowners pretty flexible, and regardless of that, I think it'll be difficult for them to exclude the public, for the public to enjoy the facility, and although it's not an insubstantial amount of money, funding to repair it, I think if you depreciate it over a number of years and so on, once it's fixed, I think it is acceptable spend of public money. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Archer. Any others? Otherwise, I'll hand it back to our mover.
Yep.
Back to our move to close. No. Oh, Councillor Orr, there you are, thank you. Yes. Nearly missed you.
He missed me. Yes, this is a different one because, you know, you see throughout the municipality that ratepayers are building on our land and we're building on their land, and it's a bit of a mess. We've had just been talking about the way of the foreshore development where nothing has happened for 20 odd years, and then we quickly go and do some work on someone else's land. So I'm not sold on this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. I'll hand it back to our mover, Councillor Mason. Anything to say in closing?
Thank you, Mayor. That's some good commentary there. Thank you.
All right, I'll put that to a vote. You're voting on authorising the General Manager to undertake necessary remediation repairs to existing vehicle platform, and then to authorise the General Manager to formally transfer ownership and ongoing responsibility of the viewing platform at 40 Gun Parade. All those in favour, please raise your hand or say aye. So Councillor Keyser, Councillor Mason, Councillor Ashley, Councillor Harris, Councillor Lowe. Against, we have Councillor Barwick, Councillor Archer and Councillor Orr. The motion is carried 5-3. Now, as we noted earlier on, we had a late item, so we now move to item 9.2, which is budget allocation for the Georgetown Cricket Ground. Now, I'm going to give you the 5-minute or the 30-second synopsis, which is there's clay on the surrounding wicket because it used to be a grass turf. When we irrigate the round area, the clay area is holding water, sometimes making the ground unplayable while the rest drains away. So the proposal is, while we have the window of opportunity and weather that is not inclement, we remove the clay, install all up, we have a universally drying area, which is cheaper to maintain, and we can store the clay should we ever want to reinstate the turf wicket. I'm calling for a recommendation, calling for a mover that Council authorise the transfer of $49,500 from the public open space reserve to remove the old clay wicket at the Georgetown Cricket Ground and replace with sand-based medium and associated drainage. Can I call for a mover, please, which is Councillor Harris, seconded by Councillor Mason. Councillor Harris.
Yes, it's not of use having a facility that really seems to be that good and not being able to use. There's been a lot of work done over the years on the cricket pitch and the footy ground and a few other places, but it would be good to see that it can be used, even if it is not for turf cricket, but for a cricket wicket that can be utilised by young fellows coming up and coming. So,
well said.
We'll see.
Thank you. Councillor Mason.
In the first instance, Mayor, I'm no longer associated with the Georgetown Cricket Club, so there's no conflict of interest in this.
Thank you.
Having been involved for the previous 6 or 7 years, I've done a lot of work on that oval, especially on the centre wicket, and the clay has always been a problem when it gets a bit damp. On this occasion, for this subject, it's once it gets wet, you can't manage it, and when it gets really wet it swells, and the runoff from the swelled area runs onto the synthetic wicket on both sides, because there's a clay wicket both sides, and then you end up the little dam on the synthetic wicket, and that's why you can't play. So I think it needs to be done urgently, because you can only actually manage that clay when it's dry, and over the last 2 or 3 years the cricket club has been impacted by late starts to the season through basically no fault of their own, so we don't want that to reoccur. So I think this needs to be done urgently. Thank you
Councillor Mason. With that, I'll open to the floor speakers for, against or questions. Councillor Orr.
I don't know the full history regarding the cricket ground, so when was the synthetic pitch laid?
Very, very recently, but I'll hand over to, do you want to do it, Andrew? I think Shane was in attendance when he did it. Oh, over to you. Joe is the Director of Infrastructure, Andrew McGarvey.
I'm informed that it's been 5 years.
That long? Wow. I think it's shorter than that. I'm pretty sure it's shorter than that.
It was put in when we was sort of basically booted out of NTCA into the TCL. That was 5 years ago.
5 years ago, wow.
So of course we missed, they missed one season. That's another part of another season through works on the ground. So it's 5 years.
Thank you.
Was there other work engaged at the same time? Or was it just a pitch put down? Was any groundwork done at that time?
Just the synthetic wicket and concrete was laid at the council's expense, a total of about $15,000.
Any reason why this work wasn't done then?
Through the chair then? Through the chair to the Director of Infrastructure?
My understanding is that there was some hope that at some stage in the future that the club could return to a turf grade, so at the highest level. Obviously, that's not in their immediate plans now. It was considered again when we upgraded the surface 12 months or so ago now. But just the impacts of having those different mediums is making it very almost impossible to manage.
Okay, I'll speak to the motion then. So since it's been laid for 5 years, I can't see the immediate rush to have it done now. As it happened, they've used the last 5 years. I'm also mindful using public open space money towards cricket and football grounds, they've had a lot of money spent over the years, and I'm looking forward to when we have a open space policy put in place of where that money is actually going to. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other speakers for or against? I'm going to hand it back to our mover, Councillor Harris. Oh, Councillor Buck, I missed you, sorry. Councillor
Buck. I did actually want to defer this from even coming in as a late item, and I notice here that it says Council may choose to defer the project and consider funding it in next year's Capital Works budget programme. I mean, to me, I'm listening to what everyone's saying here, but I have concerns that we get hit with this today, it's all going to happen virtually as soon as it hits the table. I understand that the cricket ground's got to be looked after, I understand that. There's been all different things have been our fault that have happened up there. And when that got waterlogged that time, we could have done something then. But we didn't do anything, we had to let it drain out and dry out. You know, so I mean, we've had lots of problems go on up there, but I'm not happy just to take public open space to remove this and put sand there, because is there any guarantee that that will cover that bill when you're removing it plus replacing it with new filling? That's another big concern.
All right, well, I'm going to actually take part of that. Thank you, Councillor Bowick. Firstly, I'm going to take part of that. I'm going to ask the Director of Infrastructure, so have you received professional expert advice on the best way to remediate the field to achieve the outcomes you're trying to achieve?
Yeah, through the chair, thank you. Firstly, I'll just start. It's not our general practice to bring these items at late notice, but yes, we have, and that's part of the reason that it's taken this long. Obviously Council's aware we've raised this issue. It has been raised throughout the season with a couple of games that were cancelled this year with the challenges that we've had. Since that time we've been working with our turf agronomists to work through what the best outcome or best way to achieve the outcome we're trying to get to. There was a number of different ways to do it. We've worked with a couple of contractors. We've now landed on the approach that we've now put forward, and that though has been costed by two separate contractors. So we're pretty confident with the budget request that we've or allocation that we've asked for.
Okay, I'm going to ask another question. So that reserve area, our sports field, is that considered as public open space in our area plan?
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay, so it is actually public open space. And I'll also point to the fact that we have a public open space reserve. And our public open space reserve currently has a balance of $301,000 and $301,400. So we can comfortably accommodate the cost of $45,000 within the $301,000. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then my final question is, if we do delay making a decision today, will there be any capacity for us, or what is the probability of us, to actually make these changes without impacting the start of the next cricket season, or alternatively foregoing the functionality we're looking for in the next cricket season?
If we were to delay the decision today and push it into next year's Capital Works program, you would be looking to do it at this time next year. It'd be pushing it too late to try and get it ready for the season, and the flow-on impacts would be that if we have any wet weather or any issue with watering the grounds, that there would be cancellations again, would be most likely.
Thank you. Councillor Harris? Nothing? Sorry. Councillor Harris to close. Sorry. I thought you were going to ask a question. Councillor Harris to close.
Thank you. Yeah, look, I think the timing is imperative that we actually get it started straight away, because we don't want to run to the end of the football season and not have anything for the bucks to do around the place as far as the cricket season is concerned. And it's obviously been delayed a couple of times over the last couple of years, and we would rather actually have a playable surface when we get an opponent. So rather than have it cancelled because of lack of suitability. So I'm all for getting it going straight away.
Thank you, Councillor Harris. I'll now move that to a vote. We are voting on authorising the Council to transfer $49,500 from the open space reserve to remove the old clay wicket at the Georgetown Cricket Ground and replace with sand-based medium and associated drainage. All those in favour, please raise your hand or say aye. We have Councillor Keyser, Councillor Mason, Councillor Ashley, Councillor Harris, Councillor Lowe. Against, we have Councillor Barwick, Councillor Archer and Councillor Orr. The motion is carried 5-3. Just update my notes. Thank you, Andrew. Done. Okay, welcome, Cheryl. So our Director of, and it's a long title, Community, where is it here? Corporate and Community, that's it. Cheryl Hyde, welcome to the stand. Section 10 is Corporate and Community, and 10.1 this year pertains to sponsorship requests for the Georgetown Neighbourhood House for their New Year's Eve event of 2024. I note that Councillor Lowe has left the chambers through her, on account of her declaration of conflict of interest through her employment with the Georgetown Neighbourhood House. If I can ask everyone to review the recommendation on the bottom of page 68, which is to provide $20,000 sponsorship to the Georgetown Neighbourhood House towards the New Year's Eve event to be held in Georgetown on the 31st December 2024. Using the funds available from the sponsorship budget. Can I call for a mover, please? Councillor Mason is our mover. Seconded by Councillor Harris. Councillor Mason, take it away.
Thank you, Matt. $20,000, it's a good sum of money to see disappear in about an hour and a half, go up in smoke, but it is it is New Year's Eve. It is a well-organised event. It is an event for 6,000 or 7,000 people to view, from ages of very young to very old. So it encompasses the whole municipality and some of our neighbours. And I think it's well worth the effort. And I think for our municipality and our reputation, I think it's money well spent. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Mason. Councillor Harris.
Yes, I haven't been able to attend the last couple, but all I've heard is very, very good feedback from the people that could attend. And which only augurs well for the ongoing function. And I must get to it this year.
Thank you very much, Councillor Harris. I'll open that to the floor. Speakers for, against, or questions? Councillor Barwick.
I'll have a question after. I don't support this $20,000 to just blow up in smoke. I consider and think about the pollution in the river. I listen and read and hear about the dogs that go missing and the dogs that are so scared. I also, when I look through this document, I noticed that one part of the sponsorship, it had West Tamar Council as one of the sponsors, but it had $10,000, but not it had not committed, right? So I rang the West Tamar Council. They had no idea it was in our agenda. I asked them, were they going to be committed to the cracker night that was over here? And they didn't even know it was noted in the agenda, but it's in there for that. But it's not ticked, it's ticked as uncommitted. My concern that I would like to, wanted to have seen, and I think it needs to be looked at and considered, I gave all the information to the general manager, councillor, always been and seen the laser lights. I would support having laser lights, having them run instead of having crackers that blow up in 5 minutes. We could own our own laser lights like they do down the coast, and we could have a week of laser lights with how they do it, and council all knows how well they are and what a great thing it would be. So, I mean, I just think cracker nights are nearly out of it for... well, that's my whole opinion on cracker night. I think it's a waste of $21,900 and something just for the fireworks, which is a lot of money. But I don't support that. I'd go crazy to have something like the laser lights and no one gets offended or whatever.
Thank you, Councillor Barwick. Any other speakers? Councillor Archer.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mayor. It's the sort of event that you've probably got three camps. You've got a camp that really loves them. You've got another one who hates them, you know, and the dogs, you know, gets their dogs barking and swimming across the river, apparently, and this sort of thing. You know, and then you've got the people that would be, you know, agnostic about it, you know, don't really care. My tendency is probably to, it's a substantial amount of money, tendency is to consider supporting it, but maybe it would be good to see in future years some alternative proposals, you know, maybe what Councillor Barwick suggested or something else, you know. It's a bit, it's a pretty traditional sort of thing, but it's, fireworks are getting that expensive these days. I think there might be better value somewhere else. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Harris.
Thank you, Mayor. As far as the laser light situation is concerned, it's not only down the east coast, it's brought in from the north. Not probably my cousins, we've got a check in there. Anyway, you have to have them trained up and competent with the use of that. We haven't got anybody in this area that's coming.
Councillors, so hang on a second. So, again, you've got the councillor speaking. It's not an opportunity to debate each other. Speak to the motion, please, and then if you've got questions, you may ask them. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, the motion has been moved. We have a move in Councillor Mason and seconded by Councillor Harris.
Anyway, at this stage I'm in support of going ahead with the current situation, but if we can look forward and organise something to, although it's going to be hard on me to get somebody in one company within the state to come and service our request rather than the other 40 communities around the place to do it. So I'd say go ahead with this year and look a little bit earlier, look prior to next year as to what we can actually do with it.
Thank you, Councillor Harris. I'll speak to the motion. So I'm of a similar mind to Councillor Harris. I think that this year we are sufficiently advanced, and I would imagine that probably those companies who do event management for New Year's Eve probably already have their bookings in place for the end of this year, given that there are a number of communities that want to host similar things. I very much support what Councillor Barwick is saying and what Councillor Archer is saying as well. I think that, you know, as a council, we should encourage the applicant, and again, this is not a council event, this is an external event, but we should encourage the applicant or maybe even facilitate bringing in alternatives for them to consider. I like the idea of laser lights. I think that if we can potentially look at what the capital equipment expenditure is, that would be, I think, an exercise that might return well for our community. But then in addition to that, I also want to point out, and this is my long-standing view with all of these sorts of things, I like these events because they are very broad, they are for all walks of life and all members of our community, irrespective of your socioeconomic profile. I think that that's a great thing. But ultimately, whenever we're funding external groups to host events, we have to guide them on a journey that they can incubate an event, prove that it is sustainable, that there is a market for it, that people want to attend it, and then we need to help them to monetize that event so that we can over time withdraw in being the sole funder or even facilitate potentially drawing in other funders for it. And I note with interest that in the applicant they mentioned West Tamar Council. I think that I myself have had some informal discussions with members of the West Tamar Council, and there is an appetite potentially to participate. So I think there are options there whereby we can assist with getting alternative funding streams. But for this year, I will support this event. I think it's good for our community and all of our community. But for next year, I'd very much like to see us explore what other options there are and have a formalized approach working with Neighbourhood House on trying to draw in other funders so that we can look at the long-term funding obligations of council and we can slowly withdraw ourselves out without taking away one of the most fun days of the year for our community. That's all I'm going to say. Thank you. Councillor Orr and Councillor Ashley. Who was first? Councillor Orr was first, apparently, I'm told, by the umpire. Councillor Ashley, let's hear it. Thank you. Good manners.
I'd just like to congratulate Neighbourhood House on actually coming forward and getting their sponsorship request in, and the way it was put together, I think it's been done very well.
Thank you, Councillor Ashley. Councillor Orr.
Going back to your comment, Mr. Mayor, so has the council taken on a post-event review from last year's event? It's now in April. So.
Thank you, Councillor Orr. Through the chair to the Director of Community.
Thank you, Chair. We haven't had a formal review with Neighbourhood House. Neighbourhood House have provided us with an acquittal for the funding, though, and we will talk with Neighbourhood House. We have recently received an event application, and we'll be in assessing the event application. We'll also be doing a review of the event.
Thank you.
Further questions? So our total sponsorship budget this year is $40,000. So currently we've got $23,000. And the kitty, is there any other event applications, sponsorship applications in the pipeline for these funds?
Through the Mayor, we currently have no further event applications, but there's still opportunity for two more council meetings, so the potential is that there may be other events apply.
Thank you.
noted the in the applicant that invitation was going to be sent out to councillors, Georgetown General Manager and Mayor, and last year the same box. I don't believe that happened last year. Was that correct or not?
I received an invitation. I can't speak for anyone else. So it looks like there's a sprinkle of some yes and some no's. So it's hard to give you a direct answer.
Yep. Okay. I'll comment about the light shows, if you don't mind.
Thank you. Please do.
It's more of a winter time event. It wouldn't work in summertime. Would do at midnight, but wouldn't accommodate the younger generation. Having at 9 o'clock, you wouldn't see the laser light. So it's something we could look at. We were looking at doing some sort of event in the off season, and we could do that up here as well. But I don't think it would work that well in New Year's Eve. But saying that, there is other things we could look at doing in New Year's Eve. I do have been to the event last year myself. I did leave before the fireworks. I do have some safety concerns. I have addressed that with the director as well. If we do want to save some money, you could. I know the motorbikes did draw a crowd there, but somewhere you could reduce the funding application and not have the motorbikes there. Because the money, if we do accept $20,000, is not just going towards fireworks, it is spread around the $55,000 of the cost of the event. But the mayor had a bit of a point before regarding worrying people off, you know, but we've done the opposite. We've gone from 10 to 15, and I heard the same argument last year, and now we've gone to 20. So we don't seem to go in the right direction if that's the way the council thinks. So I'm not going to vote for this, but I'm happy for them to reapply at a lower amount.
Thank you, Councillor Orr.
Chairman, can I just ask for a correction?
Yeah, of course.
A correction. In the document, it states here the Tamar Valley Folk Festival got $9,300. They only got $9,000, not $300. So their account in this statement states $9,000 they got from council. I just wanted that corrected, that was all.
Can we
it's
just
only a typo.
We'll confirm that, and if it is correct, then we'll make the appropriate correction. Thank you. All right, I'm going to hand it back to our mover. I think that's a pretty thorough debate on every level. Councillor Mason to close.
Yeah, good commentary, good debate. Put the motion, thank you.
Let's put it to the vote. All right, all those in favour of supporting this event, please raise your hand or say aye. We have Councillor Keyser, Councillor Mason, Councillor Ashley, Councillor Archer, Councillor Harris. Against, we have Councillor Barwick and Councillor Orr. The motion is carried.
Can we get Councillor?
So then it's instead of 8, it'll be 5-2 because we had Councillor Lowe who left the meeting. It carried there, just having you. All right, 5-2. Okay, section 10.2, the council loan allocations. Did I get a 4-3? No, Councillor Barwick and Councillor Orr were the only two. No, Councillor Archer voted for it.
Oh, sorry.
It is, yeah, sorry. All right. So the council loan allocation. So basically, every year we have to. Okay, there we go. We've got a mover already. Before the record, anyone listening in, basically every year we have to give an indication of whether we intend to undertake any further debt for Bar for the community. This year we are basically advising Treasury that we will not be requiring any further borrowings. Our mover is Councillor Barwick, our second is Councillor Harris.
No further comment, we just don't want to borrow your money.
Okay, anything you want to say? That's as a mover, that's it. Councillor Harris.
Yeah, we don't want money.
Any speakers for or against? We put that to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand or say aye. Unanimous. Okay, section 10.3. I'll first ask the General Manager to note the typo correction.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As mentioned earlier at the General Manager's declaration, just want to bring to the attention of councillors, excuse me, any attached policy at clause 8.3, section 8, that the clause should be amended to read, councillors are able to claim to and or from their residence or workplace. With your indulgence, I'll have the officer's recommendation amended to read as such and then present to council to either move as a motion or otherwise. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. So on page 77, if you have the printed pack, it reads point 8, councillors are able to claim travel to and or from their residence or workplace. All right. So page 77, if you've got the printed pack. Let me find a few. I'll find a few on the digital one. Hang on, Winston. I've got it here. If you're on the... If you
right in the back. Right in the back. Right in the back. 224.
So it's 8.3. So if you look in your table, 8.3... It is on page 77 if you're on the digital pack as well. And if you look at the centre column, it's at point 8 in the centre column. Councillors are able to claim travel to and or from their residence or workplace. Okay. Okay. So you've seen the change. I'm going to call for a mover. Mover is Councillor Orr. Seconded by Councillor Mason. Councillor Orr, take it away.
Thank you, Mayor. So this is was presented to us back in February. I did move a motion then, so we've workshopped it twice, and we've come back with these changes. Been a few bit of a shuffle of the points there, but otherwise it's still... points sort of mean the same thing, but does give any potential new councillors coming on next term ability to just sort of adjust to people from where they live, where they work, more flexible. People lifestyles have changed over the years, and this is more reflective to what where people are living and where they're moving from. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Mason.
Thank you, Mayor. Ever since I've been a councillor, there's been some concerns around the travelling part of this motion. So hopefully this will sort it out for the future.
Thank you, Councillor Mason. Any questions, speakers for or against? Has it been well workshopped, this item? I think I can say that with absolute confidence. Councillor Archer.
Is there any evidence that has to be provided in the way of... somebody's place of work? I mean, residence is generally pretty easily identifiable, but as for somebody's place of work, like that can, the verification of that can sometimes, like for me, my place of work could change from time to time. Other people, it's a set, you know, workplace, factory or whatever.
Through the chair to the General Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think the policy is flexible enough for the General Manager to use some discretion in that instance, Councillor Archer. I think the other thing I'd say is that, as people have discussed, we have a number of controls in place that would prevent, I would hope, abuse of the policy. We have to report on it on an annual basis, which is audited from the Tasmanian Auditor General's office as well. So if there is any circumstances of abuse of policy, we could refer that to relevant agencies or undertake audits or whatever that might be. In terms of requesting evidence of workplace, where there are circumstances, like you've indicated, that may be that, you know, your workplace moves from time to time, I'm sure that we could, as I said, use some discretion in those instances where it's not a fixed workplace all the time.
Thank you. Councillor Archer?
Also in regards to
transparency of the of any claims made and that sort of thing. Is there any transparency mechanisms other than reporting in the annual report as a bulk sum?